Kia ora koutou, it's 11 on Sunday. You're listening to Artbank.
Strange times of the mountain, lions and mountain deer.
Kia ora koutou, it's 11 on Sunday. You're listening to Artbank.
Good morning.
Kia ora everyone, welcome to Artbank. A wonderful Sunday out there, and a wonderful Sunday in here, up at the BFM. We've got a big show lined up today. I'm really excited.
We've got Louise Menzies in studio. Do you want to say hi?
Hi.
before we get started, I just got to give a shout out to the Summer Sorted Super Prize Pack giveaway, which is the biggest giveaway on 95BFM for many years. It includes flights to Hawaii and Portland, Oregon and America, thanks to Hawaiian Airlines, a year's supply of burgers from Lord of the Fries, two open water paddy dive courses from West Haven Dive HQ, a year's supply of Natricare organic tampons, a $500 summer survival kit from the Beer Spot, and a Fuji Feather single speed bike from T White's Bikes, as well as a year's supply of Karma Cola Dry Coffee Supreme delivered to your doorstep every week, 6 months supply of Oob organic ice cream, double passes to BFM's favorite summer festivals, Wonder Garden, Laneway, Splore, and Womad, vouchers for Recycle Boutique, Gull, Southbound Records, Meze Bar, and the Mexican Cafe, registration for the 2017 48-hour film competition, full car service from Vic Park Auto, and Xbox One, thanks to Orcon, a double pass to every flick screening in 2017, the complete Studio Ghibli collection on DVD from Madman, and you'll be on the door for every King's Arm gig next year. All you have to do to enter in this amazing competition is head to BFM's brand new website, 95bfm.com, and register to be in the draw to win. Everyone who enters gets a B card number reserved for them, so stay tuned for more exciting news to come. The winner will be drawn live on Breakfast on the 23rd of December. Oh my god.
I'm entering that.
Yeah. It's a good competition to enter, like, any one of those prizes.
It'd almost not go over, like, you know, I'd change my year's plans for that, eh? I'm not going overseas next year, no way. Sticking in Auckland. It's been a big old week for the art world. Had the Elam open day yesterday, cruised around there and had a good look at things.
It's about 150 artists, or it's a huge number.
Yeah, and that's still on today, so if you want to go down and check that out, I highly recommend it. It's my favourite open day in years.
Oh, that's good to know.
So Louise, good morning, how are you?
I'm good.
You've got a show on at Artspace at the moment with a bunch of others. What's the title of the show?
The show is called Potentially Yours, The Coming Community, and it's curated by John Mutambu, who titled the show after a book by George Elgambin of the same name, The Coming Community. I feel like I can talk about my contribution.
Yeah, sure, yeah, because I feel
easier than maybe
the whole show in general.
The whole show.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's a very dense show. Like, are there six artists in it?
There's six works. One works kind of collaborative piece.
And they're all quite sort of, but they're all quite potent. Like, there's, I know, I found it was like any one of the works in the show could have been a standalone thing and still be incredibly impactful.
Yeah, I think it is a really powerful show, and I think actually John, one kind of phrase that I like from what John kind of has written and articulated around the exhibition is this idea of potent impotence and this question of like action versus inaction, and I think the show is amazing in the way it distills a lot of different positions around that question or that possibility, and I think some of the works, like I don't know, they like hopefully make you question your own actions, politically, socially, or otherwise. But I guess the work that I have in the show, it's a selection from a series of work I made called Time to Think Like a Mountain, which was the result of a residency project I did. I'm smiling because Theo's phone just went off.
Battery's coming out. Out of there, boy.
Sorry to interrupt.
Where was this residency?
I was invited to do a residency with the University of Connecticut, who have an art gallery within their art school, like a little bit similar to how the project space functions at ELIM, or perhaps St. Paul Street, because it's also hosting international residencies. And so I was resident there in 2014 with a specific invitation to work with a collection of alternative press materials, which is housed in the university collections, kind of within the umbrella of their library special collections. And this collection was developed to begin with from the student protests that happened on campus in 1968. So in that year there was a wave of student protests across the US and many other campuses and other sites across the world. In the US it was like people were mobilizing around issues such as the Vietnam War. There was a lot of anti-war protests around civil rights, around women's rights, gay rights, many social issues. The student body at the University of Connecticut began to share and then collect print material and pamphlets, information with other student groups around the country to kind of assemble their own library of radical action. And the student group itself was called Students for a Democratic Society, or SDS, and there's quite a history on that in itself in the US. So these group of students had started this collection of material being circulated amongst other student groups, which then grew into include all kinds of other publications, self-published, underground, independence, kind of a lot of different ways that these initiatives are now looked back on and sort of talked about. And eventually that sort of went on to be collected and then looked after by the university library itself.
Right.
And it's since gone through like quite a transformation in its way that it's accessed and the way that it might get disseminated. And these were like all questions I was thinking about when I got there, you know, like,
is it still underground, would you say, or is it?
Well, I think that's, that's like a really like important question that you have when you arrive in this library and you're like, oh, this stuff is like totally urgent, but it's stuck here in this library. Is it still so-called alternative? What is an alternative now? And I think John's exhibition became like a really nice way for that question to be reopened in the frame of like potential rather than like alternative. Like I think that's what I've come to value about that work being cited in this show. But I guess originally in like working through this content, I was always having that question, like what do we do with this notion of an alternative now? What still feels urgent or relevant from this moment in time? And actually I should say that this collection's still active. So right.
Yeah, I was going to ask about what's happening now. Is it still an ongoing...
I was there, they were collecting a lot of material from the 90s. And more recently, there was a lot of fanzine material that was entering the collection. I got interested in this group I hadn't come across before called Crime Think, who are like a contemporary anarchist group. So they're still actively collecting. And it's basically the largest institutional collection of so-called self-published content.
And would as a model, do you think it's, from your time there now, do you think that carrying on collecting within the institution is a worthwhile practice, or would you like to see a sort of a more alternative archive as well as just an institutional archive of alternative stuff?
Well, I think what's great is that I found that as an institutional archive, they were very open to that archive being reordered in the case of me, like by an artist coming in and working in a very unconventional manner with this material and changing its circulation in the world by including it in exhibitions and via the artwork I've made. And so that was kind of how I came to approach the problem of this stuff being in this, in having ended up in this place.
Right.
And I think it's important to like remember that alongside this particular kind of repository for this material, there's many independent libraries or collections in many communities, and there's a lot of material being circulated online also from this time, and a lot of obviously contemporary discussions which are occurring, which continue these issues that kind of came to a fore in a certain way in that radical moment of the 60s and onwards.
Louise, you've brought in a record. Do you want to give us a little introduction to that before we have a listen?
Sure. So I bought a record in today to play that we happen to have a copy of at my house, which also is featured in this alternative press collection. It's mostly print material, but they have a little bit of AV, like there's some film and some records and cassettes. And so the record I've brought in today is a split, which on one side is the Chicago Women's Liberation Rock Band, and on the other side is the New Haven Women's Liberation Rock Band. And we're just going to play a track called Sister Witch.
Cool. That sounds really good. You're tuned into Art Bank on a Sunday morning and we're listening to Sister Witch.
Strange, we didn't know, we didn't realize. To the Break Battle on Queen's Wharf, Wednesday, November 30th, featuring the illest of DJs and MCs and the best of the best B-boys and B-girls busting out Buddha spins, outlaw steps, and of course, floating gremlin spins. The Break Battle on Queen's Wharf, November 30th from 7 till 9. For more info, find Queen's Wharf on Facebook or go to queens-wharf.co.nz.
You've reached Tally Kiwi Nisus, New Zealand's number one psychic hotline. Please hold the line for your specially selected clairvoyant.
Hello, this is Susan. What can I foresee for you?
Hi, I was hoping you could tell me what the traffic is going to be like on New North Road this afternoon.
Right, let me just see. Okay, ooh, it's not looking good.
Really? Your psychic powers are telling you that?
My psychic powers? Dude, you're driving a car in Auckland. Of course you're going to get stuck in traffic.
There are easier ways to get the juice on your forthcoming traffic woes, the best being the 95BFM traffic report. Every weekday on Breakfast and Drive, we'll let you know which streets are arse to ankle and which roads are flowing free. The 95BFM traffic report, proudly brought to you by Scootling, your key to unparalleled freedom with a range of style and scooters and mopeds to ease all your congestion woes. Visit them at 310 Great North Road and online at scootling.co.nz, the spiritual homeland of city movement.
You're listening to Artbank.
Welcome back to Art Bank. That was, what was that song called?
Sister Witch.
Sister Witch. Pretty good 70s feminist rock coming out of the States. Very cool, very cool. And we've just been talking about your interaction with the archive at the Connecticut University Library of underground publications from the 60s up until today. And I'm sort of interested in how you as an artist interacted with those that archive. What did you sort of do when you got there? Did you just have a lot of reading time first, or?
Yeah, I did, and it was great. The residency was structured over two visits. So originally, I went and just spent almost 3 weeks, kind of reading, sifting through, navigating it in a very subjective way. Just really following up things that appealed to me, both because of their content, but also like their design. I realized that I was also interested in how stuff looked or how things were being communicated visually, I guess.
I think because one of the things that I particularly like was what's the sort of zine publication where there's the mission statement on the back? And it's that thing of, like, you're cramming as much into every nook and cranny as such a thing of, like, home production.
So you're talking about this one work which takes an image from a publication called Rat, which at that point was at this, like, moment of change. So that publication was some listeners might have heard of the East Village Other, which is, like, a pretty kind of, like, classic kind of underground paper from New York, which, you know, Robert Crumb illustrated, and, you know, a lot of the covers have become well known. And then Rat was kind of like the more hardcore version of that paper and didn't last half as long. And at this moment of that issue, the magazine is taking stock and becoming an explicitly feminist publication and goes on to change its name to Women's Liberation.
Right.
But in this moment, this issue, which I'm pretty sure is 71, they make an announcement on the back of the magazine to say we are stopping publishing for a certain period of time, basically to regroup and change our focus primarily to reporting on women's rights, because they feel that a number of other issues that they were covering in the paper were actually being covered elsewhere, but this issue of women's experience and the discrimination against that was really what needed to be dealt with.
Right.
But you're right. Like, the nature of how that's expressed and the way that it's laid out, the really stark use of images, like, and the reuse of the Dorothea Lange image on the front cover was really meaningful for me too. So it's an image of a woman from, like, Depression era, right. Like the 30s. And there's also, and I can't recall the exact quote, but then there's this sort of cut and paste quote about the experience of, like, of labour exploitation. And then there's a statement on the back about how they're going to pause work and reform and think about how to respond to this kind of history, as well as, for them, like, contemporary dynamic, gender.
And that kind of, and I guess when you've been talking in relation to the work about creating things for a future audience, and then that's so explicitly a moment of change. It's just quite an interesting thing to try and comprehend 30 years on. And in the Pantograph Punch review, Lana Lepisi comments that it feels like there are still these same sort of publications are being started constantly, whether anything's actually kind of opened up in that way.
I was just reading an interview with the writer Alana Ferrante, kind of Italian author, and it's a great interview. She's being interviewed by Sheila Hetty. It's online. I can't remember the website I read it on. But she, she's kind of talking about, in a broad term, women's rights and women's experience, and Ferrante makes this comment, you know, we can't afford to let our guard down, you know, and like she's kind of alluding to this idea that, and it's in the context of, so it's in the context of actually the Trump election and how some people have rightly interpreted that as the rise of misogyny, as or the sudden legitimization of that in a public sphere, along with racism, xenophobia, like homophobia, a whole range of really upsetting things. I think Ferrante's trying to make this point, like, what it used to be like could happen again if we're not careful. And so for me, that's like an interesting, well, it's a kind of useful statement to think through what Ferrante's getting at. And like what, and for me, it's like, what might it mean to look at a document from that time when some of those, when that fight, if you like, or when that front felt more present, but also a time when a way to discuss it was being enabled and mobilized. And I think that's what I particularly like about that issue I chose of Rat, is that not only is it bringing up a kind of history around, so feminism in this case, but it's also trying to bring up an example of a community finding a way to self-organize and shape their voice to find self-determination, which I think is an ongoing project. And I think the way we relate to history is an ongoing project too. And so for me, it's not that that's second wave feminism, maybe that's, you know, that's white feminism, like that's irrelevant now. I think it's more like what potential still is unfolding from that moment, and how does that meet the present and the future. And I think that, yeah, history, the way I tend to think about history is like that there is feelings and forms and images and stories, and it's like this multifaceted trajectory of like documents kind of, and responses that are always like kind of overlapping differently in time.
It actually like resists like clear narratives or...
Well, I think it's important too, because dominant narratives always leave other ones out. And I guess what I'm trying to say is like, it's not simply these categories of past and present, but rather like it's the interaction of that that's interesting to me.
I find it very interesting what you're saying, and I think that that issue that you've chosen is really interesting because of this idea of pausing as well. And when you're in a movement these days, do you have the time to pause and reorganize, or does the voice get lost amongst the online chorus or something? I guess it's a nice opportunity showing that work to pause and think about things and that idea of regrouping, and I don't know, it feels like the right time for showing that issue.
Yeah, maybe that's a nice way to talk about the other works in the show, because like feminist histories is just one of the subjects in this series and in the Art Space show. So in general, my response to that, to the archive, which is where the conversation started today, took the form of like many, if you like, subplots in that alternative press world, and drew on content like from ecological struggles, civil rights, environmentalism, feminism, socialism, like really a whole range of social issues. And the Art Space show brings together a smaller number of those, but in particular combination. And so what I was thinking to talk about next in relation to this idea of like taking a pause is next to the image using the Rat publication is the cover, a reprint of the cover of a magazine which was run by a community group in the Appalachian region called Foxfire.
Okay.
And
where's the Appalachian region?
The Appalachian Mountains are like what was traditionally referred to as sort of hillbilly country in the US. It's like the home of moonshine and
Bluegrass. There's a real heart there.
Mm. Right, okay, cool.
And that stretches kind of, my geography's not very good, but actually I think the Appalachian Trail, which is a very like famous long like hiking walk, goes all the way from I think like Maine to like South Carolina or something like that.
Right, okay.
Don't quote me.
That's good to know. Yeah.
Okay. But basically it's like a mountainous region that
it's kind of known for its isolated kind of history. You know, Appalachian writing is that very kind of obtuse, like isolationist, kind of almost gothic histories.
I feel like I took you away from where you were going with this issue.
I wish I could say more about Appalachia.
No.
But what I know from this magazine, which was attempting to celebrate Appalachian culture and did a lot of like oral history and reporting of just stories and the lives of members who live in that region. But this particular issue I worked with included detailed instructions on how to build a log cabin, and that's the kind of cover image on this issue. So I think it's just, and I think the title of the issue is just how to build a log cabin. And there were literally like expandable plans, like very practical information on how to go about that. And the log cabin, I think, I was interested in how this could be interpreted like in the present time as a desire for sort of escapism. And this kind of possibility of like withdrawing and that being like a meaningful decision to take. And related to that is another text which I draw on in another work. Use the cover of a reprint of an essay by Paul Lafargue called The Right to Be Lazy, which was, yeah, which is an interesting story in itself. So Lafargue happened to be the son-in-law of Karl Marx, but was Cuban-born, and then came to wrote this text while living in London in 1880, and
this is pretty good.
From a Marxist from a Marxist perspective, makes the case for laziness and creativity as like fundamental human rights, which Marx went on to disagree with, interestingly. But so this text was then, I discovered it in the archive as a reprint in pamphlet form by a Chicago collective. And I went on to use the cover of that pamphlet in a work which I paired with the cover of a lifestyle insert within the Mother Earth News, which was a kind of like... in fact, I think it's still running, or at least they have an amazing website which archives a lot of their publications. But I guess it was like kind of hippie, back to the land type publication. So those are kind of other narratives which I was trying to build out from this, example of Rat, which is actually, Rat's a lot about action. Right. These other works are kind of about potential inaction or the desire to to withdraw or go on retreat.
Okay, well, cool. Louise, do you want to cue up another song and we'll listen to another one from this? You can do
we'll do some ads.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay, cheers. Hey, that's just to reiterate, that's Louise Menzies talking about the show Outspace, curated by John Mutambu at the moment, called Potentially Yours, The Coming Community. That's on this weekend. You should combine that with the grad show and check it out.
The age-old musician's dilemma has finally been solved. Hellertau's brand new number 6 is the answer. It's double the hops, but half the tipsy, so you can sink some beers and remember how to play your songs. The specially crafted Session IPA has crispness for days, hoppy as hell and very drinky. Hellertau number 6 is perfect for nursing on days out in the sun and for keeping your rhythm section tight. Get yours now from Faro, Fine Wine Delivery and selected retailers. Hellertau number 6. Ah, the possibilities.
Longtime BFM darling Beck Runger returns with a brand new album, Close Your Eyes. Produced and performed in collaboration with Cody Silicon Nielsen, Close Your Eyes features 10 stunning reworkings of songs from Beck's impressively varied palette of tastes, including the likes of Nick Drake, Kanye West, The Meters, The Minchicks, and Francois Hardy, as well as 2 brand new originals. Hallelujah, Beck Runger returns with Close Your Eyes. Get it now from all good music retailers.
What you got there?
Just found this big BFM Christmas cracker in the prize cupboard. Keen to give it a hoon.
You know my Christmas cracker policy, never say no.
Holy crap, what a haul!
I know, check out these tiny nail clippers. Brilliant.
Well, yeah, I guess. But look at this, it's a massive BFM Christmas party at the Mighty King's Arms.
True, that's pretty good. But how about this tape measure? This is actually perfect because I was thinking about making a t-shirt.
Don't you want to get into this incredible lineup of bands and DJs?
Honestly, I'm more into this freaking joke. I mean, Santa's favourite singer probably is Elvis Presley. It's funny because it's true.
That is pretty good. I gotta give it up.
The 95 BFM Christmas Party in association with Budweiser. Thursday, December 1st at the King's Arms. With Yokozuna, Merc, Shiraz and LSJ, and Roy Irwin, plus DJ sets from Duel, Princess Chelsea, and Grow Room. It's the only Christmas party you need, so go to 95bfm.com for details and be there.
Louise, do you want to introduce what we're about to listen to?
So this next track is off the same record, which is which I which, yeah, I meant to explain, is a split. So one side is the New Haven Women's Liberation Rock Band, and the other side is the Chicago Women's Liberation Rock Band. And both these groups came out of women's groups. So some of the musicians are trained, some aren't. And they had this kind of communal process of arriving at the instruments they play, the style they play, and the songwriting itself. And the record is on Rounder Records, which was an independent record label at the time, and with a focus on kind of folk.
Can you break down that the way they chose the instruments a bit more? Was that just a conversation that happened, or?
Well, there's a detailed booklet.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Which includes their voices on there. I don't know. Let me see if I can.
Louise has just brought out a full menu of how this.
That's fantastic.
Band has come to be.
The hardest thing to deal with was the music itself. What could we make out of such a motley collection of tastes, backgrounds, and instruments? We had started from scratch, not by fitting accomplished musicians into traditional slots. We had no leaders, arrangers, managers, agents, roadies, even equipment or instruments. We thought of the bands as collectives, so we wanted to learn together and work toward eliminating the inequalities of musical power that existed among us. Our progress has been slow and difficult. It has come out of thousands of hours spent practicing, teaching each other, taking lessons, listening to other bands, jamming, writing, and working all kinds of things out with each other. Over the past 2.5 years, each band has evolved its own material and style, which is partly the result of the combination of instruments we happen to end up with, and largely the result of our efforts to make collective, non-assaultive, joyful rock music. And with that, we'll go to the track, which is So Fine by the New Haven Group.
Feel so high.
You're back with Art Bank.
Sunday morning. I keep saying Sunday morning. I don't know why.
almost Sunday noon. Tom, do you want to introduce what we're about to listen to before we...
Oh, yep. We're going to go straight into that. Yeah. So this is Ahilapalapa Rand, who is was out on the water last week protesting the big naval fleet that was here for the 75th anniversary of the... anyway, I think she talks all about it, but all those navy boats that were down there, she was out on the water giving them a good run for their money. So here's Ahi talking about that. She's a former guest on the show.
Aloha kakao ko Ahilapalapa Rand's Hukuiwa. I'm standing here on a small boat just out of the Viaduct Harbour. We've come out today because there's a massive gathering of warships from around the world that are doing this kind of obscene parade with all of these boats following in support of them. Just this huge display of military power. Almost all of these warships have been responsible for huge human rights transgressions and genocide, specifically in the Pacific. This is just another way of displaying the ongoing militarization of Moana Nui Akiwa. And it's disgusting. And so we've come out today just to say it's not okay. This is a show of solidarity from all the way in Hawaii. I'm standing as a Hawaiian here, through to Aotearoa, and right to our brothers and sisters in Rapa Nui. We've just passed a Chilean warship that's been responsible, hugely responsible for the genocide during the Pinochet regime, and also the ongoing oppression of our brothers and sisters in Rapa Nui. So, hi, kapa pai tonu mato. We're all here, we're all connected, we're all part of this Moana Nui Akiwa, so solidarity to us all. Kura.
Cool, sorry about that. That was some seriously windy Waitemata noises in the background there, but...
That's
the nature of the ocean, I guess.
Yeah, that's the nature of the ocean.
Worst things happen at sea.
So, Louise, as well as this work you've got at ArtSpace, you've got a lot of other things going on. Do you want to talk about what you've got coming up in the next couple of months?
Sure. So, the next thing coming up for me is a screening, which is happening at Te Uru, I think on December 6th. I actually can't get it straight if it's the 6th or the 7th for some reason.
It's the 6th.
It's the 6th.
Yep.
Thank you for that. which is being hosted by Circuit, and my film is one of six, which were commissioned as part of a program called This Is Not Filmmaking, Artists Work for Cinema, which asked to respond to the work of Julian Dashba, his writings in particular, his book published called This Is Not Writing, which was curated by George Clark, who's going to be here to introduce the screening. And it follows the inaugural screening, which happened down in Wellington at the City Gallery earlier this year, which I wasn't able to attend, so I'm super looking forward to seeing the work.
This is your first chance to see the whole
program.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and also my piece in the cinema setting, which was part of the brief and something I ended up considering a lot in the work that I made. Yeah.
Have you done any other work which has responded specifically to another artist or another artist's writings like this? Or I just think it's an interesting way of getting good art out of people. Like all the Circuit films that I've seen before have been stunning, responding to
Joanna Margaret Paul.
Yeah, Joanna Margaret Paul. Yeah.
It's difficult, I have to say.
Yeah, yeah.
I have made work that's explicitly referenced other artists before, and it's a really interesting experience to kind of feel like you are you've partly entered someone else's work or they've entered yours. It does become a kind of exchange. And sometimes I think it's a bit like writing a letter, that you're not necessarily going to get a reply.
Yeah.
But you're kind of having conversation. And actually the way I dealt with the Dashboard Commission was to, in a way, make a work about Nancy Holt instead. And so my work explicitly draws on a film that she made with Robert Smithson called Swamp. I directly appropriate Holt's images.
Right.
In the work.
And what was Holt's relationship to Dashboard? Was that it?
Like zero.
Zero.
Yeah. So that's okay. I guess that's my voice.
Yeah.
Pairing them together.
Right. Oh, great. Yeah.
Well, maybe it's unfair to say zero. Dashboard certainly had an interest in American minimalism, but not in the form of film.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, very good.
Well, I think should we wrap up the conversation there?
It's been great to be on the show.
Thank you very much for coming on. And I think we can close out by acknowledging that Pauline Oliveros passed away this week. She's the pioneer of deep listening, which is sort of a pun-based idea where she was recording in very, very... recording experimental noise in very deep locations. So she recorded one of her seminal albums, I think, at the bottom of an oil drum. So yeah, she's an interesting figure, and she passed away...
like an oil rig, you mean?
Or,
At
age 84.
Wow.
So I think we could play an excerpt from one of her pieces.
Cool. Hey, Louise, thanks very much for coming on the show. It's been really cool. And yeah.
Thank you for tuning into Art Bank.
We'll be right back.